He's receiving death threats. And gradually, people around him are beginning to be killed. So he feels he must flee. And he flees, trying to seek asylum in the United States. And as he's fleeing, he contacts me, because we knew each other from a past film. And he says, don't come. It's way too dangerous. He said, I've already left. So my role from then on was to work with him to document his story as he came, and also to try to find out ways to keep him safe.
And how long was that journey, Pamela? How long was that journey? We just have 30 seconds.
2 months. It was 2 months, the journey, and he was languishing for several years in Ciudad Juarez, trying to get into the United States.
And what happens when he gets here is incredible. Pamela, in these last 20 seconds, what you're trying to do with this film is it opens all over the country.
We're now on the Abrazos Tour, which is a 26 cities. We're opening in 26 cities, north, south, east, and west in the United States. We hope everyone will join us. We hope everyone will become informed. We hope everyone will vote. And we hope everyone will learn about the border industrial complex as it pertains to your congressional district.
Pamela Yates, I want to thank you for being with us, director of the new magnificent film, Borderland, The Line Within, and Gabriela Castaneda, advocate with the Movement of Immigrant Leaders in Pennsylvania, MILPA. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Wake up, KBOO listeners. It's time to support local community-based media this fall by donating and becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give. When you contribute now until September 21st, your donations will be matched dollar for dollar, up to $11,000, thanks to listeners like you. Double the impact and double the fun.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and the International Travel Group. KBOO Community Radio and ITG are organizing a journey to Cuba, December 14th to the 21st. It is a guided exchange of music, history, and landscapes. ITG supports KBOO's mission of fostering community through diverse voices. More information at kboo.fm/Cuba.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this special membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, the Portland Auditor finds insufficient evidence that City Commissioner Rene Gonzalez broke the law when paying to update his Wikipedia page. An Oregon tribe sues a federal agency over plans to build an offshore wind farm. And in national news, it's National Voter Registration Day. We'll hear about local and national efforts to get out the vote. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, September 17, 2024. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Eric Leuschner. The Portland Auditor's Office says there's insufficient evidence that City Commissioner Rene Gonzalez broke campaign finance law when he used city funds to clean up his Wikipedia page. That includes attempting to remove mention of a 2022 Portland Mercury news roundup that mentioned that Gonzalez had thanked a member of far-right group Patriot Prayer for their support on Twitter. Gonzalez spent $6,400 in taxpayer funds on an independent contractor to help make 8 edits to his Wikipedia page. The city auditor's office got 3 separate complaints that this might be a campaign finance violation. The auditor's office said it was, quote, an exceedingly close call, but that there wasn't enough evidence to determine if this violated Portland's campaign finance rules. They say they're waiting on more public records on the matter, including some that Gonzalez's office hasn't turned over yet. If those documents change the auditor's decision, they have 30 days to make a new one. The auditor says they submitted the matter to the Oregon Secretary of State to investigate whether any city employees engaged in prohibited political activities. They also asked the Secretary of State to look into whether Gonzalez broke state law by asking city employees to do political advocacy during working hours. An Oregon tribe is suing the federal government over their plans to hold an offshore wind energy auction on the Oregon coast. The lawsuit was filed by the Confederated Tribes of Coos, Lower Umpqua, and Suislaw Indians. They say the U.S. Bureau of Ocean Energy Management didn't look at how private offshore wind development would impact their cultural resources and the ocean environment. The lawsuit reads, quote, the lifestyle and culture of the tribe is tied to Oregon's rich coastal and marine waters, which support countless species of seabirds, marine mammals, fisheries, aquatic plants, and dramatic landscapes, end quote. They say the area can't sustain the impact that offshore wind development would bring. The tribe also says there is a lot of unknowns about what offshore wind might do to the fish habitat, marine mammals, and cultural resources. They also claim that the agency didn't do a comprehensive environmental analysis. The Ocean Energy Management Agency set aside 2 areas for floating offshore wind farms on the Oregon coast. One is 32 miles off the coast of Coos Bay, and the other is 8 miles from Brookings, near the California state line. The lawsuit was filed in federal court on Monday. Today is National Voter Registration Day. Young Washingtonians are spreading the word about why young people should sign up to vote in this year's election. Eric Tegedoff has the details.
Today is National Voter Registration Day, and some young people in Washington State are encouraging people in their age group to ensure they're registered. The general election is less than 2 months away, and ballots in Washington State will start going out in just over a month, on October 18th. Isla Nye is a student at the University of Washington who was a summer fellow with the Washington Bus, a youth voting organization. She registered to vote 3 years ago when she was 18 and says the process was not complicated.
It's just a really great chance to get involved as a citizen and vote on policies that will be directly affecting me and my community. So I was excited to register.
Online and mail-in voter registration forms must be received in Washington State by October 28th to vote in this year's general election. But if Washingtonians miss that date, they can still register to vote in person anytime before 8 p.m. on Election Day, November 5th. Nick Boada is also a student at the University of Washington, and he's helping register people to vote in the lead-up to the election.
Obviously, a very important election in deciding where this country's headed. I believe, especially for young people who this election will affect most, it's important for them to get out and vote, since our age demographic votes at a much lesser rate than those older than us.
Nye says the presidential race is a big focus in November, but she notes that it's not the only race on the ballot.
For those who are hesitant about voting this year because they're maybe unhappy with the presidential candidates, I would really like to remind them that they are voting also for state policies and positions that affect our community on a local level.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A Washington state agency has canceled an event after learning one of the speakers scheduled was the police officer responsible for killing Dante Wright. Kim Potter was a Minnesota police officer when she shot and killed Dante Wright in a traffic stop in 2021. She was convicted of manslaughter and served 16 months in prison. She was supposed to speak at a training session for the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board. The event was for their enforcement officers, and it was scheduled for next week in Vancouver. The board chair called off the event out of respect for Dante Wright's family and that they didn't know Kim Potter would be speaking. Wright's mother told KGW, quote, whenever I hear Kim Potter's name or hear her doing anything like this, it's like tearing a Band-Aid off a forever bleeding wound. She doesn't get to triumph off of our tragedy, end quote. A new policy brief from the Sentencing Project finds that between the year 2000 and 2022, youth in juvenile justice facilities dropped 75%. Suzanne Potter has more on the story in California.
The number of youth held in juvenile justice facilities in California and across the U.S. dropped 75% between 2000 and 2022, according to a new policy brief from the Sentencing Project. Researchers say it reflects big declines in youth offending and arrests and lower rates of incarceration during the pandemic. Josh Rovner with the Sentencing Project says this contradicts frequent assertions by politicians and commentators that youth crime is out of control.
It's surprising to many people in the country that believes that things are always getting worse, that believes that this generation of kids is worse than any generation that came before it, when the evidence doesn't back that up at all.
California has been on the forefront of juvenile justice reform. The state closed the last of its youth prisons last year, moving to a county-based model to keep children closer to family and community-based programs. The state also banned almost all prosecution of children under age 12 and ended the transfer of 14 and 15-year-olds to adult court. Rovner says youth are much less likely to reoffend when they are spared incarceration and instead enter programs that emphasize mentoring, family therapy, and restorative justice.
Some people argued drops in incarceration would only lead to increases in offending. The opposite happened. In fact, by locking up fewer kids, offending continued to drop. So successes can build upon successes, but there is still so much work to do.
State data show that the number of youth in California juvenile facilities stood at almost 2,800 in 2023, a dramatic drop from just over 11,000 in 2002. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Washington considers the need to tone down anti-Trump rhetoric. Senate Democrats are likely to force a second vote on a national right to in vitro fertilization. And Trump allies repeat falsehoods about migrants amid bomb threats in Ohio. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
And the agents' hypervigilance and the detailed swift action was textbook. And I commend them and our partners for an exemplary response.
Acting Secret Service Director Ronald White says 58-year-old Ryan Wesley Routh, suspect in an apparent assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump in Florida, never had a line of sight or a chance to fire his rifle. Texas Republican Congressman Pat Fallon is on the House task force investigating the July Trump assassination attempt. He agrees with Trump that Democrats' rhetoric is to blame.
He's been skewered over the last 8 years, being compared to Nazis and Hitler and fascist and totalitarianist and racist.
On Monday, President Joe Biden spoke with Trump by phone. The president is condemning political violence and says the Secret Service needs more resources. As Congress continues work on a short-term funding bill to keep the government open through the end of the year, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says the agency will get what it needs.
So as we continue the appropriations process, if the Secret Service is in need of more resources, we are prepared to providing it for them, possibly in the upcoming funding agreement.
Schumer is also expected to force a second vote on a bill granting a national right to in vitro fertilization. In June, only two Republicans voted with Democrats in favor of Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth's proposal to do that. She says Republicans need to back up their rhetoric in support of parents who need to use IVF.
That Republican success come this November would even further imperil their right to try to create a family.
Over the weekend, Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance took heat for promoting the conspiracy theory that Haitian migrants are eating pets in Springfield. The Ohio senator justified repeating what he knew was a lie as necessary to get media attention. Monday, when asked on CNN if the issue would hurt the party down ballot, GOP House Whip Tom Emmer stuck with that line.
What's the problem is the mainstream media refuses to report what caused this problem.
Ohio Republican Governor Mike DeWine calls the claims garbage and defends the Haitian community, but stops short of condemning Trump or his running mate. As Springfield faces bomb threats on multiple public buildings, DeWine is calling for more law enforcement, especially at schools.
Taking this absolutely extraordinary and extra step to make sure that we have patrol there and that they do sweeps every single day.
Today's National Voter Registration Day. Isla Nye is a student at the University of Washington and has worked on youth engagement.
It's just a really great chance to get involved as a citizen and vote on policies that will be directly affecting me and my community. So I was excited to register.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $30,000 by September 21st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact. At 6 o'clock, it's Transpositive PDX. Then at 7, hear from the candidates for KBOO's Board of Directors. Tonight's weather will be cloudy and windy with a low of 52 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a high of 72 degrees. Today in history, in 2011, the Occupy Wall Street movement began in Zuccotti Park in New York City. It decried economic inequality and the influence of money in politics after the Great Recession in the U.S. The quote of the day is from American author Ken Kesey, who wrote, quote, "I'd rather be a lightning rod than a seismograph." It's National Voter Registration Day, and even as events around the country encourage people to register to vote, the work goes beyond a holiday. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tuesday is recognized as National Voter Registration Day. Events are taking place across the country to encourage people to register to vote. KNBA's Jill Freitas reports on efforts that go beyond the holiday.
In Alaska, nonpartisan efforts to mobilize Alaska Native and American Indian voters are year-round through Get Out the Native Vote. Michelle Spark is the Director of Strategic Initiatives for Get Out the Native Vote. In the months leading up to the 2024 November election, Spark is traveling to as many rural communities in the state to educate Alaska Natives about the importance of voting.
I work weekends, I work evenings, I work holidays because there's so many public events or forums or private events that call for a presence and talking about elections. And so, you know, obviously there are down times, there are slower times, but, you know, we are constantly studying voting patterns, behaviors, statistics, or putting them together, compiling data.
She says work includes voter education and ensuring that as many rural communities receive information about the voting process and elections. Spark says getting out the Native vote in the state is important.
We represent a quarter of Alaska's vote. That doesn't mean we all vote, and it doesn't mean we all vote the same way, but we have an outsized presence potentially outsized presence in civics and elections and that kind of sway in governance if we vote to our potential.
Another focus of Get Out the Native Vote is making sure to educate Alaska Native youth. Spark says they're relying on new approaches to help young people better understand how voting works.
They can complain that they feel it was a complicated system, but it's something that will take time and homework and practice. And Get Out the Native Vote has a nice video that where we show people have voted for their favorite Native foods, and then you can see the process in real time and what it looks like. And we also have an app that kids can use and vote for their favorite foods, and they can see in real time how their little community has voted.
More information is available online at aknativevote.com.
That was Jill Freitas reporting. Tribal leaders, community members, and allies of the Hualapai tribe in Arizona are gathering outside a federal courthouse in Phoenix for a day-long rally to support the tribe's lawsuit that seeks to protect a sacred site. The tribe filed the lawsuit against two federal agencies over the approval of a lithium exploration project near lands used for religious and cultural purposes, the Navajo Hopi Observer reports. The tribe says the project threatens a sacred spring and surrounding lands. Supporters see the project as an opportunity to further clean energy technology. The tribe's asking the court to extend a temporary ban on exploratory drilling. A hearing is scheduled Tuesday in U.S. District Court for the District of Arizona. The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma has published updated official demographic maps showing the tribe's citizenship across the country. According to the tribe, the release marks the first updated maps made public in more than a decade. There are more than 460,000 Cherokee Nation citizens. Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. says they're proud to have them available not only for official tribal use, but for public access, which may help connect Cherokee citizens in different regions. The map shows Oklahoma continues to be home to the highest number of Cherokee citizens. The map also shows the top 12 states where Cherokee citizens live. Other maps are in the works, including ones that pinpoint first language fluent Cherokee speakers. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
College students nationwide continue to pressure school administrators to cut financial ties with the Israeli government over the war in Gaza. MIT's recent move to close an Israeli weapons research fund and an upcoming vote at Brown University has students in the divestment movement feeling encouraged. Catherine Carley has the details.
As college anti-war protests enter a second school year, students are maintaining pressure on administrators to cut all financial ties with the Israeli government. Students at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology are calling for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza and an end to all weapons research funded by Israeli defense contractor Elbit. Recent MIT graduate Andrew Feldman, who is Jewish, says it's important for people of conscience to speak out against the war.
We're going to keep working, and we hope that institutions will start to recognize this terrible genocide and war crimes that Israel is committing on the Palestinians.
Feldman says MIT should also end partnerships with Maersk, a shipping and logistics company critical to the Israeli war effort. MIT students celebrated the recent closure of an industry-backed fund for weapons research as a win, but MIT officials maintain the fund was already due to expire. Continued student protests at Brown University in neighboring Rhode Island convinced administrators to bring a divestment proposal to a vote at Brown Corporation Board's meeting next month. Students aim to cut school ties with at least 10 companies providing Israel with weapons and surveillance systems. Micah Maltzman is a senior and member of the campus group Brown U Jews for Ceasefire Now. She says students are busy compiling testimony and preparing to make their case.
It's both an urgent issue and feels like a morally pertinent issue on our campus right now, letting the corporation know that this isn't just like some group of radical students pushing for divestment, but like a large majority.
Maltzman says Brown has a long history of student protest, including a student-led divestment campaign against the former apartheid government in South Africa, but that administrators have been less supportive of dissent against Israel. She says knowing thousands of students in Gaza can no longer attend college there, it's hard not to wake up and think about it every day. Israel began its war against Hamas after the militant group attacked Israel on October 7, 2023, killing about 1,200 Israelis while another 250 people were taken hostage. Since then, more than 40,000 Palestinians have been killed by the Israeli military, according to health authorities. For Commonwealth News Service, I'm Catherine Carley.
In Virginia Hanusik's new book, Into the Quiet and the Light, photos are paired with essays and reflections from community members on how climate change is shaping the Louisiana coast. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. After a big hurricane hits the Louisiana coast, photos of the devastation make front page news. Houses with roofs torn off, people wading through flooded streets. Broken furniture piled on lawns.
There's almost like a stock imagery that we use to describe climate change.
But photographer Virginia Hanisick tells the story of the region in a different way. Her images capture how the distinctive landscape of the Louisiana coast has been shaped by nature and by human hands. A home on stilts overlooks a grassy bayou. Ripples of water lap against a tall levee. Cows graze beneath a warning sign marking an oil pipeline. In her new book, Into the Quiet and the Light, Hanasik's photos are paired with essays and reflections by local scholars, activists, and community members.
I wanted to be able to bring in folks who can speak to their lifelong relationships with this landscape.
For example, in the book, a local Vietnamese chef shares a recipe for shrimp rolls and reflects on how the BP oil spill harmed the Vietnamese shrimping community. Hanasik hopes the approach will help people better understand the region and appreciate what's at stake as seas rise and storms worsen. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Republicans in the House of Representatives came up with China Week to pass numerous bills designed to confront China on everything from electric vehicles to economic espionage and purchases of farmland. Most of the bills will die in the Senate, but they would likely be revived in a Trump administration. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. China Week sounds like a time for celebrating Chinese culture and food. But for Republicans in the House of Representatives, it's all about politics. They seem to think that targeting China will play well in the elections, so they went all out with over 24 pieces of legislation last week. Democrats joined them on some votes. Voting to punish China is a safe bet. The best way to get something done in Washington is to frame it on China or national security, said Rory Murphy, who recently left his position with the U.S.-China Business Council. There's no political consequence to being too tough on China, he said. House Speaker Mike Johnson of Louisiana previewed some of the bills in a speech in July, saying China posed the greatest threat to global peace, and said Congress must keep our focus on countering China with every tool at our disposal. This is Cold War II language, though different from the Russia bashing of earlier times in one key respect. China is not just a key strategic adversary, it is a provider of important goods, human as well as financial, commercial, and mineral resources. Here are the bills that passed in the House. First, the Biosecurity Act to prevent U.S. federal agencies from contracting with five Chinese biotech firms and their clients. It would also establish an interagency process for identifying additional companies. Biotech executives argued that decoupling from the firms would contribute to widespread U.S. drug shortages. The House therefore extended the deadline to January 2032 for halting existing contracts with those Chinese firms. Next, the Hong Kong Economic and Trade Certification Act, which would close Hong Kong's representative offices in the U.S. In a nearly unanimous vote, the House decided to show solidarity with pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong by closing these offices, which mainly seek to promote trade. Next, a bill requiring Senate ratification of any World Health Organization agreement on pandemic preparedness. Republican defenders of the bill argue that American self-determination is at issue here, which really means don't allow an international agency to dictate masking or vaccinations. Next, revival of the China Initiative, a failed Justice Department and FBI program designed to catch mainly ethnic Chinese American science researchers who allegedly stole secrets for China. President Biden abandoned the program amidst charges of racial profiling of innocent researchers. Only one academic, non-Chinese, by the way, was ever successfully prosecuted under the China Initiative. Then there's a bill to bar people who purchase electric vehicles that contain parts made or assembled by an entity of China, Russia, North Korea, or Iran from receiving tax credits. And a bill to restrict the sale of agricultural land to foreign nationals from China, as well as from Russia, North Korea, and Iran. Here again, immigrants with no ill intentions would be caught up in this bill, while nationals from Saudi Arabia who have bought land in Arizona and helped create a water crisis would not be affected. This bill would also withhold certain federal funds from universities partnering with Beijing-backed research and institutes, another dragnet like the China Initiative. And finally, a bill to restrict federal funding of colleges that are home to Confucius Institutes, on the argument that these Chinese-funded culture and language programs, according to a Texas Republican, have conducted widespread military espionage inside the U.S. That charge, by the way, has been investigated thoroughly and found to be without foundation. To some Democrats, the Republicans approved the wrong bills. What they ought to have passed, said Representative Raja Krishnamurti, Democrat of Illinois and ranking member of the House Select Committee on China, is bills to really improve the U.S. economy. Quote, nothing to repair our industrial supply base, nothing on critical minerals, and nothing to fix our legal immigration system to enhance our competitiveness, nothing to invest in science and innovation, and nothing to upgrade the skills of our workforce, he said. Needless to say, China is protesting these bills. The Chinese embassy calls them a new McCarthyism that interferes in China's internal affairs and infringes upon China's sovereignty. An embassy spokesperson said in a statement that passage of this legislation will cause serious interference to China-U.S. relations. The primary purpose of these bills is to demonstrate that the Republican Party is the only one that can be trusted to confront China and defend national security. But all the bills will have to pass in the Democratic-controlled Senate to become law. Few will. But if Trump wins in November and Republicans take control of Congress, look for most of the bills to reappear as part of a major economic decoupling from China, justified by an exaggeration of the China threat. I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, September 17, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertow. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Eric Tegadoff, Suzanne Potter, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a great time to join. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for Making Contact.
Making
Contact.
Making Contact.